among those members of Congress who stood up and introduced those articles of impeachment. Now, 17 communities on record all across the country calling for impeachment proceedings to begin against this president. Millions of Americans signing petitions, including ours at ImpeachDonaldTrumpNow.org. This campaign is designed to protect the Constitution and our democracy in the face of what is a constitutional crisis, a president who's trampling on the rule of law.
Why impeach?
Well, the impeachment power is what we have as people under the Constitution to remove a lawless president. There is an investigation that Special Counsel Mueller is proceeding with, and that's a criminal investigation, whether or not the president or any of his associates have committed violations of federal criminal law. But there's a separate issue that also must go forward in parallel to that investigation. That's an impeachment investigation, whether the president has abused his power and abused the public trust. And now we have seen, both with the emoluments violations, violations of the anti-corruption provisions of the Constitution, where the president is treating the Oval Office as a profit-making enterprise at the public expense, with obstruction of justice, with potential conspiracy to collude with the Russian government, to interfere with our elections, with the abuse of the pardon power. The list goes on and on, Amy. And the fact is that this president must be held accountable under the law, and that's through the impeachment process.
Finally, Weston, Massachusetts, what happened?
Weston, Massachusetts is the most recent community to step forward via a town meeting and call for these impeachment proceedings to begin. There will be other communities that step forward. But I think what's important now is we as a people stand up to defend our Constitution, our democracy in the face of a president who so defies the rule of law.
Well, John Bonifaz, we're going to do part two of this discussion at democracynow.org. People can find it in our web-exclusive section. John Bonifaz, constitutional attorney, co-founder and director of Free Speech for People. That does it for our broadcast, Democracy Now!, produced by Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Trina Nandura, Amel Ahmed, Nat Needham, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Paul Huckabee, our engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grand, David Brood, R.L. Boone. I'm Amy Goodman. Our website is democracynow.org. Thanks for joining us.
Robots the size of blood cells, Earth-like planets outside the solar system.
Science fiction?
No, science faction. Join us, Seth Shostak and
Molly Bentley and
WHFR, each Tuesday at noon for Big Picture Science.
Big Picture Science steps back to get the wide-angle view on science and technology from where they've been to where they're headed.
So think big. Big Picture Science. You'll find it here on WHFR.FM every Tuesday at noon.
We're making waves on WHFR 89.3.
You're listening to the station that's making waves, WHFR Dearborn.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views and opinions expressed on the new WHFR Journal are those of the hosts, producers, and guests, not necessarily those of WHFR, its licensee, Henry Ford College, or its Board of Trustees. Enjoy.
Good afternoon and welcome to this edition of the new WHFR Journal. I'm Susan McGraw along with Alan Mazurek, and we are looking forward to providing some information on a variety of topics today. We've got some late breaking news, we've got some information about holiday programs and so on, and most importantly, we are here to provide answers to some questions that you might have as a Dearborn Heights community member. That's what the new WHFR Journal is all about, and I don't have to do it on my own because Alan Mazurek sits in studio and does all the hard part for me, which I greatly appreciate. Was your Thanksgiving nice, Alan?
It was very nice. I did all the shopping Friday morning without even leaving the house, actually, believe it or not. So, yeah.
I'm impressed.
So we knew that this day was coming. Mm. We didn't expect it to be quite so soon. And I guess we just got to start with kind of, you know, at least for us here on campus here at Henry Ford College, what is the big news of the week?
Absolutely. This is huge. Our president, Stan Jensen, who has been with us for almost 5 years, and we know had announced his retirement several months ago, retiring in June, potentially, at the end of this school year, June of 18. Well, we just got word that he actually is going to take a position very soon as Executive Vice President of College Operations at Des Moines, Iowa Community College. It's Des Moines Area Community College, which just happens to be about a half an hour from his
where he plans to live upon retirement. So, so it's I think a win-win for him. But the news is quite sudden. He's actually going to be leaving in about 2 weeks at this point, as opposed to 6 months, which I think has thrown some circumstances for a little bit of a loop. You know, we have the presidential search underway, certainly not completed, and we're still figuring out if the applications are even still being accepted. I know we've had several people that have either nominated others or applied themselves for the position. So there is a pool of candidates that is being looked at this point. But ultimately, it means everything has to be scooted up about 6 months. Mm-hmm. This point, we're going to have to go with an interim president of Henry Ford College until the search process completes and gets taken care of. And we know that it's the Board of Trustees, the Henry Ford College Board of Trustees, that sort of coordinates the search committee and also makes sure that they're doing everything properly. Some of those members serve on the committee, as do members of a variety of other constituents, both internal and external, as it relates to the college. I understand this is like, I might not be accurate on this, but I think I heard that this is the largest search committee for a president that this college has ever had.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's good or bad, but but we'll see. But yeah, this is really, really big. He said he was going to retire and just kind of take it easy and be with family and grandkids and all that.
Right, correct.
And then hearing this news, it's like, huh, what happened to that plan? But it actually is a pretty interesting story. Did you hear kind of what exactly transpired with this change?
Well, the understanding was that, yeah, I mean, the initial plan was to be home close to family, and to be able to, move on to a retirement phase, and apparently an offer, I don't know if it's one of those, an offer that you can't refuse, sort of came up that appears to, sort of be, in your lap, almost at your front door, within a half an hour or so. That's not a bad commute for somebody who's, certainly has the mission of this level of education at heart and the experience doing it. Sounds like a great opportunity as a, was it a vice president at this college?
It is. It's actually the official title is Vice President of College Operations, and it is a community college as well, which I know he has an affinity for. So so that's kind of nice. And if I may read a quote that that is in our press release, it's actually quite nice. And this is a quoting Dr. Jensen. He says, I have deeply appreciated the HFC team, our students, and our community. Together, we have accomplished many outstanding and positive results. I will miss all of you. I hope you will understand and appreciate how much my wife, Teresa, and I look forward to being within 30 minutes of all of our kids and grandkids with an opportunity to continue serving community college students. So does it make sense? Sure, it makes sense.
Absolutely.
But it's certainly thrown a wrench in things. We'll see more, and maybe we can even get Dr. Jensen to come in and say a few words.
Oh, well, that would be nice. What do we have coming up on today's edition of the new WHFR Journal?
Yeah, we have representatives from the Dearborn Senior Services area, as well as the Meals on Wheels organization, both locally and statewide. Also, we're going to talk roller hockey. Oh, my goodness.
Yes, we are.
We have a roller hockey team, as we've told you about before, and we're going to have the actual roller hockey coach, as well as a player. Sitting in with Josh and with you also to learn a little more about that very exciting sounding sport. So lots to cover today.
All right, we'll be back in just a few moments here on the new WHFR Journal.
Let your creativity shine while learning the various facets of the baking and pastry field. With Henry Ford College's Certificate in Baking and Pastry, students will explore international cuisine and the art of garde-manger by preparing decorative food displays. For more information, please contact the Student and Culinary Arts Center by calling 313-845-1572 or visit them on the web at hfcc.edu/programs.
Thank you for being with us on the new WHFR Journal. I'm Susan McGraw, along with Alan Mazurek. And in our next conversation, we are looking forward to learning more about how our seniors are being served in Wayne County and particularly in the city of Dearborn. So we thought we would bring in the experts. That's right. We have representative from the city of Dearborn Senior Services, Terry LeBeau, in studio with us, as well as the operations manager for Wayne County Senior Services, Maisha Haddon. And ladies, expertise. I know you've tag teamed together before in presentations, so we're looking forward to some insight on how you perceive the approach to assisting seniors with a variety of services, including but not limited to the Meals on Wheels and programs that people are very familiar with in our area. So first of all, welcome to our show today. So happy to have you here.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. Susan.
Certainly. Why don't we start with Meisha and just give us a little bit about your background. It sounds like a very detailed title. I'm sure you wear many hats. So tell us a little bit about what you do on a regular basis.
Wear quite a few hats. My name's Meisha Haddon. I'm the oversee the Meals on Wheels operation for Wayne County, for Western Wayne County, which is all the communities. We service about 34 communities in Western Wayne County. It's everything west of Detroit and downriver. So we do the Meals on Wheels program, the liquid nutrition program, and also we have a congregate meal program. I've been with this operation for about 16 years and have filled many, many different positions to the current position that I'm in now.
Okay. You mentioned three different types of programs, the Meals on Wheels, the liquid nutrition, and then there was a third one. I'm not familiar with that term.
It is our congregate meals program. So at our, we have 40 nutrition sites. So at our 40 nutrition sites, if for seniors who are not homebound, they actually have an opportunity to come in to eat meals at the site. So they have us a hot lunch program that normally we serve between the hours of 9 and 1, and all you have to do is be 60 or older to actually be eligible. And you come in, you make your reservation 24 hours in advance, and you're able to have a meal at that site. And it encourages a sense of community and people to participate. And actually, so since you're not homebound, you're able to actually gather and socialize with your peers and actually still be able to get a hot meal.
Nice. I'd love to come back and get some more detail on those different components, how people can get involved, funding, and so on. But I want to bring Terry into the conversation here just for a minute. Terry, as being involved with City of Dearborn and Senior Services, I would think Meals on Wheels are certainly an important part of what you work with and what you coordinate. How do you work with Meisha to make this process happen in our local community?
Well, Meisha is like my boss overall with Wayne County, and City of Dearborn is obviously in Wayne County. And so she's kind of the buck stops here with the different programs that she's involved in, and I am as well. But for instance, the Meals on Wheels program, I have approximately 100 different drivers. Some are very old. Some are moms that drop their children off at school, and then they go and do the driving and so on. We also involve the high schools in Dearborn. For instance, Fordson High School comes and assist with taking out our Ensure, our couple cases of Ensure to the recipients that are needing that service. And that's a once a month service. And then we also have the TFAP program, which is a once a month federally funded food program. So Meisha is, like I said, the person that I go to with all the different major concerns and questions.
Okay. So although there probably could never be another Terry LeBeau, there are other people around in different communities serving in her position that you would work with as well, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Just want to get the context of how that all plays together.
Because we, like you said, we deal with 34 different communities. We have 40 nutrition sites that distribute Meals on Wheels, the congregate program, and I have about 14 liquid nutrition sites as far as the Ensure program. So yes, working with various community leaders, senior directors, volunteers throughout Western Wayne County.
Okay. I think most people are familiar with the concept of Meals on Wheels. They understand that it's an opportunity for people that are homebound or seniors to get some nutritional meals. I think oftentimes we connect it with the holidays. So with our Thanksgiving, you know, season just ending and moving into the Christmas time, there are those special components, as I understand, of this program that allows for specifically holiday meals. But I'm guessing what you're doing and what you coordinate is sort of that weekday, every, you know, kind of every day, not just during the holidays.
Right. Yeah, we do the daily delivery. So our program, we service about approximately 2,000 seniors a day. And through Western Wayne County, we deliver meals normally between the hours of 9 and 1, and we rely heavily on volunteers to actually deliver all of our meals. And basic eligibility is for those seniors who are homebound. They're 60 or older. There's no one else in the home that's able or willing to provide meals for them. And there's kind of like a brief application process that those seniors have to go through to be eligible for it. And once we're able to certify them, we're able to get the meal started for them. But the holiday component of it, our funding agency, the Senior Alliance, actually does a holiday meal for Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Okay. We've worked in my family as it's sort of our Thanksgiving tradition of getting together and delivering through the Senior Alliance the different program, Meals on Wheels, meals to different people. We've worked in Dearborn as well as like Redford and Inkster and Garden City and so on. But oh my gosh, it's not only the most rewarding feeling in the world, but it's also very emotional and very difficult in some ways. And I'm only seeing, sometimes it's the same people depending on where we get placed, right. But I'm only seeing these people once, but for those that are delivering on a regular basis, wow.
Yeah, it is. It's the Meals on Wheels program. It's so much more than just the meal, because a lot of our seniors, that is the only contact that they actually have. They look forward to our volunteers. Sometimes they're more willing to look at the volunteer than the meal. The meal is almost secondary to that human contact, because our volunteers, they mean so much to them. It's like they're there to check on them. They're that safety net, because they're homebound. They don't always have their family that's able to come over every day to see about them, but that volunteer is there knocking on their door every day at 10 o'clock and saying, hey, here's your meal. It's something hot. We're making sure they're there, they're home. And if they're not home, there's that extra added safety that we're checking on them, we're calling, we're finding out what's going on. So they rely heavily, and they look forward to seeing their volunteers.
Mm-hmm. Terry, in the city of Dearborn, where you coordinate this program, do you have some numbers for us, some statistics, generally speaking, of how many seniors are participating in this program, and also how many volunteers you get to work with?
We service approximately 120 seniors per day, Monday through Friday, and we deliver out of Sisson Manor for the west side of Dearborn and Kennedy Plaza for the east side of Dearborn. And that's about 120 recipients, and then we also, like I told you before, have about 100 volunteers,
okay.
Drivers.
Right. Do drivers pick up a schedule month to month, or how does that process work?
Well, we have two different types of drivers. Drivers that are on permanent routes, and so, for instance, they come every single Wednesday like clockwork, and they have their own permanent route, and then we also have substitute drivers.
Okay. In your experience working with drivers, what tends to be their motivation to volunteer?
Compassion.
Okay. Tell us a little more about that. You get to see these people regularly.
Well, most drivers that I have in contact with have great senses of humor, and they just really care about people. They want to give back, and this is a perfect opportunity to do so. And again, it's just usually about an hour commitment per week. Some drivers have more than one route, but for the most part, it's an hour each week. And some of our drivers even work full-time, but their bosses have enabled them to take off for an hour and then come back once a week. And they know that they're doing service to the community, so it's all good. But then I also, for instance, the oldest driver that I'm aware of was 94 and had been doing this for 17 years and didn't want to quit because it was such a such just a really cool thing for him to do.
Wow. I think about young people. We have John sitting in studio with us today, and he's a student of our radio class and so on, and I'm thinking he looks pretty able-bodied, and I know he's an intelligent, active young man, and I'm thinking those are the ones that we want to get to be the volunteers. Then you tell me about this 90-something year old man who's doing it for his own reasons. So it really, and also mentioning that people that do it for during full work days and so on, so I'm trying to think of all those excuses that people come up with as to why they can't help with something like this, and I can't, I don't have a good one. I don't have a good excuse. So there really isn't. Is there a ratio of time where we have way more people that need the delivery than we have volunteers? And if so, how do you address that should that happen?
I haven't had to institute a wait list for the reason of not having volunteers.
Right.
our wait list right now is just due to funding, and that's more so of it, but we're in the process of eliminating that, so great. Hopefully soon. But as far as the volunteers, we're always looking for volunteers, and it's like, well, we will never turn a volunteer away. And I mean, everybody goes through a criminal background check prior to them being able to actually go out and help or volunteer or whatever the commitment is. We have volunteers that are able to deliver the meals, volunteers that come in and actually pack the meals at the nutrition site. So if they don't have the means or transportation to actually go door to door, there's things that they can do at the sites in helping to pack the meals, or they are coming in to actually do the liquid nutrition distribution. So there's many capacities that we're able to utilize them.
Nice. And I know Terry mentioned working with the local high schools and things as well. So do you get a lot of support from the schools, or have you just kind of started tapping into that?
Well, just to go along with what Misha just said, Divine Child High School also sends students to the actual sites and assist with packaging the food. So I've got Fordson, and I've got Dearborn High helping in different capacities, and also Divine Child.
Yeah. I think the reward of the service learning component of being a part of something like this has got to far outweigh any of the struggles or the challenges for these volunteers. And that's why they do it for 17, 20, or however many years. So
Definitely. Yeah. That community reward, that sense of being and sense of knowing, and it's like they get attached just as much to the program, to the seniors, as the seniors get attached to them. So it's a given. They give and take kind of relationship, and everybody looks forward to it. It's very rewarding in doing so.
Great. Well, we're talking on our program today, the new WHFR Journal, with Terry LeBeau and Misha Haddon, both in their own way representing senior services here in Wayne County, and specifically in the city of Dearborn as well. We've talked about the Meals on Wheels program and all of the benefits of this program being in existence, both for the recipients of the meals as well as for the volunteers. What are the challenges? You mentioned a little bit about funding. How does that process work, and what can we do to help?
Our program, we rely heavily on donations. Our program is a grant-funded program, so we receive federal, state funding to operate the Meals on Wheels program. In addition to that, Wayne County has generously helped out with funding as well. But we also rely heavily on donations for our program. Our suggested donation for meals is $375 per meal. But we would never deny anybody service for an inability to donate. We always encourage seniors to donate whatever it is that they can't afford to the program. Their families are allowed to donate on their behalf, and the community comes out and supports the program. So we never want to deny service to anybody for the inability to pay. We'll feed everybody that we can possibly feed. Regardless of that, that has been one of our most significant challenges, is just the funding, because our goal is to make sure anybody that applies for services and that is eligible for service actually receives that service.
Okay. Terry, how long have you been in your position?
16 months.
16 months, okay. And so we've got 16 months and 16 years. A lot of gap there. But what's interesting, I think, is we have the seasoned veteran who's been doing this and who's seen the ins and the outs, and we really have almost a new perspective, newer perspective, certainly. They say that first year you're just observing, right? So now you're into the make it happen kind of a phase. But what has your experience been personally? Do you go to work exhausted, you know, by the time you're out at the end of the day? Or how does that whole process affect your life?
Personally, I was in education for 38 years, and so this has been really a lovely job. I've really enjoyed myself, and I work with a lot of great people. We have, again, good senses of humor, and I love working with our older people, and I am an older person myself. One of the key things that we're trying to do, and this might be a little bit off the track, but is to gear ourselves toward some of our newly retired seniors and some of that age group that's still up and at 'em and ready to roll, and try to get some activities and programs that would be of more interest to that age group. So that's one of the things that has been kind of a key for me.
Okay, very good. Alan, you probably don't know, Terry actually was a teacher here at Henry Ford College at a time.
I was an adjunct professor here for about 6 years, working up in the reading lab and teaching in the English department and also reading classes.
Very good. Alan, do you have any experience with the in particular, the Meals on Wheels? Have you been involved in that in any way?
And a long time ago, and this would have been my father-in-law, who was recently retired. One of those guys who was still up and at 'em, turned into a volunteer who actually delivered Meals on Wheels for a number of years. I'm just curious, when you mentioned issues with funding, how that balances with demand. Is demand sort of reached a certain level or plateau, or does it continue to increase as the population in the area, is it aging, or are these issues, we talk about, certainly the baby boomers eventually are going to find themselves being retirees, and many of them dealing with issues with elderly parents. What's the demand in the last few years
been? It's continuous. So it continues to increase. And right now I can say our wait list right now approximately is roughly between 80 to 100 people. And at one point we did have a wait list of over 500. Wow. But we've been able to significantly decrease that within the last, this past year. We started over 1,400 new clients this past year. So we continue to try to do the best in making sure that we're exceeding those demands and trying to make sure anybody that is in need, that we're feeding them, because the last thing you want is a senior to go without food.
Right. And you're talking about in the 30-something communities that
correct.
You serve. So there's
yes.
an 80-something wait list
right.
with those 30 communities, which, again, it's you don't want a wait list ever, but
right.
based on where you were, it sounds like it's come down a long
it's
way.
It's come down significantly.
Yeah. Well, that makes a big difference, I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you had one listener right now that said, I have $50,000 that I'm just thinking about doing something fun with, and I just have no idea where to pop that money. It's the season of giving, right? Do you accept those types of literal
cash
donations?
We would love to be able to accept that donation. Yes. They can contact our office at Wayne County Senior Services. We will figure that one out with great deal of gladness and acceptance.
Okay, all right. So cash money from the outside,
yes,
always acceptable.
If everybody wants to sponsor a senior, donate, make any type of donation to our office, that they can contact us. We do, our main number is the 734-326-5202. That's where we do all of our intakes, any inquiries in the program. And if anybody wanted to make donations to the program, it every penny that comes into the program is actually put right back into providing meals. It goes directly back into service.
Fantastic. Terry, you have a lot of different kettles going at any given time, as I understand, not just the Meals on Wheels aspect of your job. Can you tell us a little bit about what other things you might be working on as it relates to seniors in our community?
Well, some of the programs that are available to the seniors in Dearborn include extended travel trips. For example, my husband and I are taking advantage of a trip coming up to Washington, D.C. It's a holiday lights tour, and we'll be touring the White House and the Capitol. And so that's just one idea. Another would be one-day travel. For example, once again, my husband and I are taking advantage of one-day trip to Adiamos Riverfront in downtown Detroit, and then also to the Detroit Symphony Orchestra, their holiday concert. We have numerous programs and events and activities. I think Dearborn does a wonderful job of just creating all sorts of opportunities for the seniors. And so, for example, they are sponsoring once a month Tigers and Red Wings and Lions and Pistons parties. They have different teas and luncheons, dinners. We have various speakers. Probably one of the speakers that we had most recently that was really well received was Commander Worf, and he is a Dearborn police officer, and he has his drug dog that comes and visits us. Thankfully, nobody got caught with anything illegal that particular day. But you get the idea. We just have events going on Monday through Friday, morning, afternoon, some evening, and then also even on weekends. Very, very, very active department.
And where are the locations of for these events?
The majority, well, our think tank, for instance, our offices are located at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, mm-hmm. and we're located on the east end nearest Greenfield and Ford Road. And drop in sometime if you haven't and see what all we have available.
Very good. John, you see what you have to look forward to when you become a senior? Oh my goodness, there's so much to do. This is fantastic. Don't go too fast, of course, but when we talk about people making suggestions or thinking, I have a group of ladies that I like to do things with, but maybe it's dwindling or they're not as capable of getting out and about as much, maybe I want to connect with a new group or get in with some more people to do something fun and interesting. Are you that flexible with opportunities, with sort of like creating programs and
yes,
trips?
Yes, recently,
things?
For example, one of our gals just asked us, could we form a pinochle group on Sunday afternoons as opposed to in the evenings or during the daytime, and we have done that. That's just an example, mm-hmm. and it came from one of the seniors. Another senior suggested a New Year's Eve party that wasn't, you know, at New Year's Eve with midnight, but as opposed to daytime noon, having a daytime New Year's Eve celebration. So those are just some examples.
Nice. And then funding for what you do and your position, how does that basically work? Is it through the city of Dearborn then?
Through the city of Dearborn, okay. Yes. But I did also want to mention, you brought up just a moment ago, and I wanted to really kind of toot the praises of our transportation. We have senior buses that go out daily, and they are available for all seniors for just $1 each way anywhere in Dearborn. So it's just a wonderful opportunity. They have 7 different vans, great drivers, and take advantage of that. If you're in that particular age group, it's great.
Why might somebody use that? You mean like for to get to the store or for
to
a medical appointment?
To get to a
something?
Doctor's appointment, okay. To get to a hair appointment, to go up to Target or Kroger or wherever, sure.
Wow. How do we learn more about all the wonderful things that you're involved in, Terry? What would be the best way to reach out to you? And also, actually, second part of that question would be, as it relates to opportunities actually on site at the facility at the Ford Community Performing Arts Center, are there things that seniors might expect that they can do when they drop in, like the pinochle and that kind of stuff? Does that all take place?
Sure, and we have a senior lounge if you just want to come on and hang out for the day, have a cup of coffee, watch some TV together with some great people, whatever.
Right. Wonderful.
The phone number for our main information line is 313-943-2412. And I'd encourage you to call and just see what we're all about and see what we have to offer.
Great. Again, 313-943-2412. And then, Maisha, one more time, make sure I got this right, 734-326-5202.
Correct.
And that's for that person that has that big check that they're sitting
big
on,
check,
right?
Or if they're inquiring how to get on Meals on Wheels, if somebody wants to know more about the program or volunteering, anything, they can contact us at that phone number.
Wonderful. Can family members call then on behalf of their loved ones?
Yes, they can.
Okay, very
good. What can they expect for the intake process if someone does apply? I mean, you said there's a small waiting list at this point, but how does the process work for people who might...
For Meals on Wheels, if they are interested in starting, our basic eligibility person has to be 60 or older, homebound, not driving or going out on a regular basis, and either living alone or with someone else who's also eligible, such as a spouse or disabled child that the elderly person was caring for. And basically, when they contact us, we would just need their general information, name, address, phone number, kind of what's the background, what's going on with them. And once they do that, we do conduct an in-home assessment, mm-hmm. and to come out to verify eligibility. And once that assessment's done, they'll be placed on the waiting list, and when we're able to start service, we'll get them started. So it shouldn't take that long to get services started for them.
To at least have a decision made, and yep. Finding, ensuring eligibility,
yes.
Obviously, but a relatively painless and easy process.
Very painless, very simple, and the family member, if they want somebody present with them at the time of the assessment, they can have their son, daughter present. We're very accommodating with that.
Wonderful. Well, it must be working because there's a number of people obviously taking advantage of this service. Yes. And both ways, again, for the people that are receiving the support as well as those that are in the vein of helping and being a part of our communities by servicing and driving and packaging and cooking or whatever else is involved. So that's a wonderful, wonderful experience, I'm sure. And we thank you both, not only for the service that you're providing in your respective roles, but also for taking the time out from your busy days to come and tell us a little more about the program and so much more that you do. So we wish you all the best. We thank you so much. Is there any last minute thing you might like to share as we wrap up today?
Blessed Thanksgiving to all.
Thank you. It's been a wonderful opportunity. I appreciate the opportunity to get in to talk to you guys and tell us a little more, tell you about our program a little more.
Thank you so much. So Maisha Haddon and Terry LeBeau, and we thank them both for their time today. We wish you both the best of the holiday season as well, ladies.
Thank you.
Certainly. We've got more to come. This is the WHFR Journal, the new WHFR Journal. Thanks to John for sitting in. And Alan, we'll be back in a minute.
Tune in to WHFR.FM 89.3 for the Highway 61 program. Fridays 2 till 4, DJ Kitty Love will play the best in blues with new blues releases, as well as local blues artists. Friday 2 till 4 on the station Making Waves, WHFR.
This is the sound of salmonella gyrating on your undercooked chicken. And it looks like Mom might be taking it out a little early. Don't let salmonella get funky with your chicken. On average, 1 in 6 Americans will get a foodborne illness this year. So use a thermometer to cook each type of meat to the right temperature. Keep your family safe at foodsafety.gov. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
This is the new WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek along with Susan McGraw. Thanks for being with us this afternoon as we talk about things going on in the community and also here on the Henry Ford campus. And of course, as we have done in the last few months, we've got Josh Hebert to talk about sports activities taking place in Dearborn at large, but also right here on the HFC campus. And there are a lot of great opportunities for people to be able to go out and support some of their fellow students who do things like, you know, play volleyball or basketball and something and wrestling and something relatively recent, roller hockey. Josh, welcome to the new WHFR Journal.
Thanks again. For having me again, Alan.
Did you have a good Thanksgiving?
Yes, I did. How about you?
Actually, it was really good. We've talked about this a few times, and this is something that is relatively new on our campus, and I think a lot of people are interested to know more about it, and that is bringing the sport of roller hockey to the HFC campus for the first time. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, the roller hockey team, outstanding so far in the first season as a program, and I'm excited to be joined today here with the coach, Rick Fenwick, and Dominic.
It's a tough one. Stankiewicz.
Thank you. Who is the goalie? Who's the goalie for the roller hockey team and also the captain? So, roller hockey, new, as we have mentioned. What is the difference between roller hockey and ice hockey?
So the difference between roller and ice is, the main difference is it's not played on ice. It's played on some kind of sports tile. There's no blades, it's just roller, like wheels. So there's that. It's not 5-on-5 like ice, it's 4-on-4. 3 12-minute stop time periods, which is pretty nice. It's less time than an ice game, which was 17-minute stop time, 3 periods when I was in high school. So pretty much that's the main difference. You don't need as much equipment, it's not as expensive as ice either. So pretty much the main differences there.
There's a lot of scoring opportunities in comparison to ice hockey. So it's in terms of entertainment, it's great value.
Roller hockey, new. You guys are doing pretty good, it looks like, in the standings. You guys, is it a conference that you guys are playing in? League? What is it?
We are a part of the National Collegiate Roller Hockey Association. And within that association, there's different conferences. We're a part of the Midwest Conference, and we're in Division II. and there's six other teams with us, so seven total. And some of them are some pretty prestigious programs. We have University of Michigan, Ohio State, Akron University, so Miami of Ohio. So a lot of good competition throughout.
So how are you guys in the standings playing up against these bigger schools than what Henry Ford is normally considered?
We're sitting in second place right now through nine conference games. Every team plays 15 conference games. And so we're about two-thirds of the way through. We're looking good right now. We're excited. And we're only 2 points behind the first-place team, Miami. And I know we at least play them one more time, so it'll be a good opportunity for us.
Yeah, we're definitely trucking along. As a first season, chemistry's building up. We're getting right through the standings. Hopefully end up first place at the end of the season, but not going to get our hopes up too soon, but hopefully do well the rest of the year.
So how did this team end up happening? Is it someone came to you and said, okay, Henry Ford College roller hockey, or was this something that you know that that there was a movement to create and you had to ask, or
you know, it's actually kind of funny. Yeah. I'm a professor here at Henry Ford College, mm-hmm. and I teach in the psychology department. And in January of this year, Dominic was a student of mine, and after about the first or second week, he heard through my background when I introduced myself to my students that I played ice hockey for years, and he approached me with the idea of, hey, let's put this roller hockey team together. I have a few guys who are interested. And I said, all right, let me do my homework on this. this was new to me in terms of roller hockey at the college level.
Sure.
And so I did my research, and I met with the athletic director, and I told Dom, I said, yeah, absolutely, I'll do it. And from that point on, it was trying to recruit players, trying to see who was interested in the campus, you know, to come play with us. And it worked out well, and you know, we were able to put a team together. And I will say, the athletic director, Rochelle Taylor,
mm-hmm. a lot of support.
Yeah, she's phenomenal. She has supported us every step of the way. She's helped us with the budget and trying to get money to you know, do a lot of the different things needed to put this team together. So she's been a great help.
Yeah, most of the guys, though, we've all played together through the years, so we pretty much grew up together. So it's kind of just, hey, do you go to this school? Oh, yeah. So, hey, do you want to join the roller hockey team? But what drew me to him really was his comment he made when he was describing himself. He said he thought he was the next Wayne Gretzky. So I was like, okay, this guy plays ice. And then he said he played for NCAA Western. I was like, okay, this guy's the real deal here. And then I had to go up to him and ask him. But at first he was kind of scared because of the liability issues of getting hurt and stuff like that. But after I talked him into it a little bit, look at where he's at now. So
Dominic or Rick, how many players are on the team with you guys?
We, counting Dom as our goalie, we have 8 players total. 7 of them skate out. Dom's in net. And most teams that we've played against at least have 10 or 12 skaters. We played, I believe, Grand Valley State had something like 17 players.
Oh, wow.
So when you think of they're rolling out 3 or 4 lines throughout the game, and we're going with 1 full line and then 3/4 of a second line.
Yeah.
You know, their conditioning.
It's tough. Yeah, for sure.
Top
it's
notch.
It's completely different. I'm having 7 guys at 13.
Just to sort of, because again, we're introducing, you know, this sport to the campus and to our audience as well. Dom, okay, so how long are the periods that you play?
3 12-minute stop time periods.
And how long in between them? Because they don't have to resurface the ice like we would think in regular hockey,
no,
right?
No, probably like a minute and a half break in between.
So it's a very physical,
physically it's
demanding activity.
For sure, yeah. Definitely on the players. I mean, not just myself. I mean, rolling 7 guys, it's tough for sure. Playing against Grand Valley and Michigan State, it's definitely a battle. But we're getting conditioned and getting ready for Missouri. So hopefully it helps us out in the long run.
Missouri as in the college Missouri or?
Yes. Okay. We're in St. Louis in late January. And we're going to face 3 different junior college teams that we're going to need to compete against in order to qualify for the national tournament in April. And then we're also going to play a Division I team, Missouri. It's on the schedule right now, so it'll be a good...
It's going to be a good test.
Yeah.
See what we got.
So the physicality of ice hockey compared to roller hockey, where does that lie in between?
It's still pretty physical in terms of actual contact. In roller hockey, the rule is you have to make contact with the puck first before you hit the player. Whereas in ice hockey, if, as long as the player is in control of the puck, you can go wreck them if you want. So you have to be careful to make sure you're making a play on the puck in roller hockey first before making contact. But a lot of these teams play physical. I mean, we played a game against Akron University. It was a grind. People were hitting each other. There were multiple players that got hurt in the game. I mean, it was a really physical game.
Yeah, it's different though from ice. You know, like ice, you see those full blown body checks, but it's like in roller, it's more of like bumping off the puck. I wouldn't say really like smoking a guy into the boards. You'd get a penalty for that, but I mean, it's still a pretty physical game for sure. Now, but I mean, as a goalie, no.
I was gonna say, now you obviously, I would assume, have some experience with ice hockey as a goalie. Yeah. Where did you come from?
Or Divine Child High School in Dearborn. That's where it all started for me. So.
I've heard of it. Yeah.
great school, great coaching. Not the best teammates I've had, but definitely was fun. I definitely wish I could go back and play high school, but those dreams are over. So
now, so you guys know, Alan is very proud to be considered a divine child parent.
I graduated there from there many years ago. My son also is a senior, and my daughter's a freshman there. So
okay. Yeah, there. So, it's a great school.
Would be remiss to mention that after I saw the look on his face when you mentioned divine child that time.
Yeah.
So now, okay, you use... And again, I'm going back to some of these basic questions. You use a puck, right?
This is what we
and so it's, you know, it's like the same hard puck that we have in ice hockey.
It's a little lighter.
A little bit lighter.
That's pretty much it. It's just the weight is a little
lighter.
Do you
wear as many pads as you would in ice hockey? Or?
Yeah, I think the people definitely shoot it harder in roller hockey than in ice just because of the weight of the puck. So we're playing Michigan State D1, for example. We played high-skilled, like, ice-level players, like the NAHL, which is the North American Hockey League, which is, like, close to semi-pro. He shot it pretty hard, so it's completely different. So in ice, he wouldn't shoot it as hard, whereas the roller, he'd fire it. So, yeah, but you still got to wear the same amount of padding so I don't feel like getting hurt. So gotta get padded up.
Is there a lot of scoring compared to ice? I mean, ice hockey, I mean, you might see a 6-5 game and say that's a high scoring game. How does it work out for roller hockey?
When I was playing ice, it really wasn't high scoring games. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's those games where you play like Detroit Catholic Central in a game Division I compared to like Divine Child. It's like we're not as skilled. So it'd be like a 6-3 game there just because they outskill us. But in roller, overall, it's more high scoring. Just because the 4-on-4, it opens the rink up just a little bit more to make more plays and show off your skills. So there's a lot more open opportunities to score. But I don't let in many goals, so I don't know what to say.
He is pretty humble. I'd argue he's the best goalie in the country for roller hockey, really. He's kept us in a lot of games that we probably should not have won. But in terms of scoring, it just depends on the two teams. We've played Ohio State twice this year, and they're a great program. They're nationally ranked, last time I looked, number 16 in the country. And we beat them 4-3, and then we beat them 2-1. So a couple of low-scoring games. We played Akron University, and it was 7-6. So yeah, it just depends on the two teams that you get together.
Yeah, and not everyone's going to be consistent either playing, so...
You mentioned open up the rink a little bit. Is it the same size as what we would look at for either high school, college, or NHL game, or is it smaller, shorter?
It depends. I mean, they're typically for roller, it's going to be a little bit shorter dimensions all around, and that's why in ice hockey there's icing, there's offsides, where those do not exist in roller hockey. But we have played on a couple of rinks this season that are
pretty small.
Some are pretty small. Yeah. And then we played on a couple, though, that are pretty big, lengthy. Where I thought, wow, this is almost, you know, NHL size. So, you know, I don't think there's a set regulation on it. So it's a little bit different from rink to rink.
Yeah, pretty much all varies. So, like, Olympic has different from, like, the NHL. It's wider. There's a lot more room to skate. And then the NHL is just obviously it's, like, regular size, a little longer, but width is a little skinnier. A little tighter, but roller it honestly varies. You can go NHL, Olympic, it doesn't really matter. It could be like a rec rink, like an outdoor rink, it's small. I know we played one Jewish community center. It was pretty small. It was tight, close quarters, but it was fun.
And that ties right in, going back to the scoring.
Mm-hmm.
Playing on a smaller rink, less room to operate. It's going to be a little bit slower.
Sure, you know, yeah.
Slower games. So.
What do you guys look at for if, say, somebody who played ice hockey all their lives wants to come in and play roller hockey? What do you guys look at for that?
Oh, gosh. Pretty much just their skating ability. Communication with other teammates, really. I think communication is really a strong part of our team. We really don't want to put other people down on the team. I know I've gotten into a few guys before. After a game, Grand Valley, I think Coach can back me up. I kind of snapped after the game. But pretty much just communication, skating, just pretty much all basic skills, passing, shooting, just all that, honestly. It's not much different. Just they'll probably have to learn how to stop in roller hockey because it's different. So,
in terms of being a coach, what I look at is some of our guys are all ice hockey growing up, and now they're converting to roller. And in ice hockey, it's harder to get scoring opportunities, where those opportunities take place a lot more often in roller. So what our guys sometimes do, you get an open lane and you think you have a great scoring opportunity and they shoot the puck. And I'm trying to show them, hey, look, that might not be the best option at the moment. Try to pass it some more. So it's just a little bit different in some of the strategy, you know, in hockey IQ.
Okay. It looked like you had something that you were brewing up over there, Alan.
Well, okay, just as coach. All yes. Right. So earlier this year, you got a student who says, hey, can we do roller hockey? I think you're into hockey. All of a sudden, you've got this team, which, from everything we hear, turns out to be pretty good, right?
Yes.
Second in the standings. Yes. All right. And what are I'm sure this has crossed your mind, you know, the plans going forward, because at a two-year college, obviously, the turnover is going to happen, and how do you keep people interested? Obviously, success sort of breeds success, but where, you know, what are your feelings and intentions for the program? Obviously, you want to have success for the rest of this season, but, you know, where does next season begin? What's being done there?
I think being here right now, talking with you gentlemen, just getting our voice heard and letting others know this team is here. It's a fun team. It's a good team, and we're going to continue to grow this program. Right now, we have 8 players in total. I envision next season we're going to have something around 13, 14 players, and we're going to continue to grow this. And another thing that we have coming up, we're starting to already recruit for mm-hmm. next season. Sure. So we're starting to look at some of these high school, you know, seniors that are playing right now around the local area. And, you know, we're going to start scouting them, start talking to them, and make them aware of the program as well. So that's one, you know, avenue for developing the team. Another quick example, if you look at a team like Michigan State, they have a Division I team. They have, I don't know, I'm guessing 300-400 kids who try out for that team. So a ton of kids do not make that team. They have a Division III team as well. And the Division III league is designed for the second of, you know, the second team, almost mm-hmm. the B team. I don't want to say B team because they're really good players. I mean, we've lost the two of them. So
absolutely, yeah.
B team's a bad term for it, but they're you know, a second team for that program. I envision in a few years Henry Ford getting to that level where we can have a Division I and a Division III team. That would be the goal.
Well, it helps to be in an environment and in a, you know, area where hockey is
huge. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
you're not going to do this in Phoenix, really.
Right. Oh yeah,
no, absolutely.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
So where is home ice for you guys? Where do you practice? Where are the games at?
Well, that's another story. That's a tough one. We started off at Canfield Arena mm-hmm. here in Dearborn, and to make a long story short, they. It's no longer an option. The building got deemed unsuitable. So we moved to the Taylor Sportsplex Arena.
Mm-hmm.
And then they decided after a couple of months to eliminate roller hockey as an option at their facility. So we lost that place. Now we found a new home in Livonia, the Livonia Rec Center. The problem with it, it's great for practice, but the rink is too small.
It is way too small.
In terms of length. To the point where there's no possibility of that becoming a home rink to have regulation games. It's too small. So it's great for practice. We're still looking for a place to call home, though, in terms of actually having home games where our fans can come and watch us play.
I think with all of this going on with roller hockey, how do you guys, you mentioned scouting, where do you guys look for the players? Because high schools normally don't have that bit of roller hockey to go and look at. So what do you look for?
Well, right now we're starting to look at different Dearborn ice hockey schools. And the idea would be to find some players that we're interested in and then having the entire off season to convert them to roller. You know, it's a little bit of an adjustment, but you know, most of our guys have done really well in that transition. So I know we're looking at Dearborn schools.
Yeah, there's a Riverview. So like downriver schools, there's a few kids we're looking at, but it's mostly just going to high school hockey games and looking at their seniors, looking them up on like Facebook or something with our Henry Ford Facebook page and stuff like that, and talking to them, see where they're going to college. Maybe if luckily if they come here, they could come try out and join the team.
Coach Dominic, thank you guys very much for this little bit of insight into
games coming up before we get to that. True. Yeah, anything coming up that people will be able to, you know, that are interested can come see you play.
In the local area, Shelby Township.
Okay.
In the state of Michigan, it's Joe Dumars facility.
Mm-hmm.
And February 10th and 11th, we have regular season games there.
Okay.
And then also in that same facility, in March 3rd and March 4th, that is our conference tournament. There's going to be a lot of great action there. So the top six teams make the conference tournament. It's going to be highly competitive, and you know, the winner of that automatically goes to the national tournament.
So this season lasts a long time.
It's a long time,
Till mid-April.
Yeah.
That's when nationals is.
And, so. And how much travel is involved? You've talked about my alma mater, Miami of Ohio, as well, and Ohio State, and going to Missouri. How do you deal with that, Dom, when it comes to the schoolwork?
It's just getting schoolwork done in advance, really. Okay. As soon as I figure out I have an assignment or a paper due, it's done within the first few days. I'm not trying to go travel, play hockey, and then do homework on the side, to be honest with you, because that's not fun. I'm just looking to pretty much play and then relax and then get ready for the next day. But some kids obviously do homework there. I don't personally do it, but I mean, that's just me. I like to focus on hockey.
Okay. Coach Dom, thanks for coming in, talking to us today about roller hockey.
Absolutely. Good thank luck you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Good luck the remainder of the season.
Thank you.
We'll be keeping an eye out on you guys leading up to nationals.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you,
guys.
Josh and Alan.
All right.
And we'll be back with more in just a few moments here on the new WHFR Journal here on WHFR, the station making waves.
Henry Ford College provides a strong foundation for students pursuing a career in education, offering a two-year associate's degree in pre-education as well as pre-secondary and special education. For more information about HFC's pre-education degrees, please call 313-845-6430 or check out the pre-education program guide at hfcc.edu/programs.
Welcome back. This is the new WHFR Journal here on the station that's making waves, WHFR Dearborn 89.3, 89.3.fm. Great conversation there with Josh and the folks from the roller hockey team. We wish them all the best of success moving forward. Obviously, we're wrapping up this edition of the new WHFR Journal. A few things going on this weekend that we want to tell people about. Let's see. Coming up on Sunday, I think it is, we've got the choral concert. The HFC Chorus, Blue Fusion, Midnight Blue, and Renaissance Voices are performing their winter choral concert at 4 o'clock at St. Paul Lutheran Church, 21915 Beach Street in Dearborn here. Tickets are $10 for general admission, $7 for senior citizens and students, current students, with a photo ID from HFC and from area high schools and things like that. That's, again, coming up on Sunday at 4 o'clock at St. Paul Lutheran here in Dearborn.
Yeah, and another opportunity, if you have not yet seen the planetarium show here on campus, it's called The Road Not Taken, A Fall Star Talk. It really is a beautiful show, and you might recall we had Steve Morrell on a few weeks ago to talk a little bit about what is happening with the planetarium, how it got started, and all that good stuff. Well, there are only two more opportunities to see the show. One is this Saturday, December 2nd, and then the other is a week from Saturday, December 9th, both at 3 o'clock. Doors open, I think, at 2:30, and they close right at 3. So you definitely want to make sure you get there early enough to get an opportunity. Oh, excuse me, it says doors open 15 minutes early. See, they don't want the long lines waiting, so they're only going to give us 15 minutes to get ready. But it is a wonderful show, very informative, and as I always say, it makes a great date afternoon. So go there and enjoy some fun with the planetarium.
Who knows, you might even hear a voice that you recognize, right?
I can't imagine that.
Just to reconfirm that you're the narrator for a significant part of the pre-recorded part of that, right?
That's right. So you'll hear something like, "If you look up to the night sky over there,"
which
yeah,
we often
do.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is a good show. It's a great show. And you know, with the holiday season, there's so much going on, and we want to sort of pick and choose, and so we can give you little bits at a time. But oh my goodness, if you want to be busy, this is the season to do so. There's no doubt about it. We're so grateful that you are taking the time to listen to this show. As always, if you have a topic of interest, and I've got lots of really cool things lined up to talk about moving forward. But if there's an organization or a topic of newsworthiness that you feel we should discuss, let us know. Give us a shout anytime. You know, you can go right to the station website, whfr.fm, and leave a voicemail or an email with all the contact information listed there. You're sure to reach one of us. So we're more than open to that type of information, and we'll do what we can to get on top of it.
All right. Thanks for listening to the new WHFR Journal. Kitty Love coming up. We're going to take a trip down Highway 61 in just a couple of minutes here on WHFR Dearborn, WHFR.FM, the station making waves.
Hi, this is Mike Holloway, host of the Go With The Flow Mike Holloway Show. College radio means to me the freedom to play what we want to without any required playlist. I get to play what I want to, when I want to, and that means the world to me. My main criteria is I like to play the music that I like to dance to.
WHFR Dearborn. Clarksdale, south of Memphis, Tennessee.